You made me get right back up to lunch.
Yes, you're welcome. I will go ahead and call us back to regular session at 7 o'clock. Please rise for an invocation led by Mr. Spence, followed by a flag salute led by Mr. Cox.
Our kind and gracious Heavenly Father, we're grateful that we can gather here as the West Wheaton Unified School District Board of Trustees. We're grateful for this community and for its staff and for the help that they give parents and students, and we're grateful for them, and we do ask a blessing upon them. And we ask a blessing upon this meeting that it would be a productive one and that we could focus on the educational needs of the children. And we also ask a special blessing on the Mandela family. And this we pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Please join me in the salute to our flag. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please. Here.
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 Present.
Here.
Okay, the first item on our agenda is a student achievement plan from Cameron Elementary School. I assume Mr. Mannion will be giving that presentation.
Good evening, Madam President, board members, Madam Superintendent, cabinet members, colleagues, and the community. I had expected tonight to be able to stand in front of you, not to gloat, but to be recognized as one of the principals in the West Covina Unified that had led his community to breach the 800 barrier. It hasn't happened. Instead, I find myself having to justify a decrease in student achievement that reflects a lack of success on my part to help my students achieve that which I know in my heart and in my head is very achievable. It is profoundly humbling to admit this lack of success. However, it has been the impetus for my investigation and analysis into the instruction, human resources, community connection components that contribute to Cameron's educational program. I have data, I have tables, I have an action plan for you tonight. I know you've seen it all. You've seen other data, you've seen other tables, and you've seen other principals' action plans. What I hope distinguishes my presentation from other principals is that I intend to very unambiguously and straightforwardly answer two questions. Number one, what is going on at Cameron? And number two, why is this year going to be different from last year? So, as we go into the PowerPoint, overall, API has decreased by approximately 9 points. Now, these numbers are approximations. If you go to the CDE website, you see a different figure. You see 5 points. These numbers were configured with the data that we provided, the district provided to our data sorting and configuring company, and these is what we're working for and working with in order to maintain consistency. We're approximately 24, 25 points away from 800. We need to make that up now, not in 2010. And that's really what our goal is this year. As you look at the data, it's very clear. Special education and EL learners are, again, our lowest subgroups. On the positive side, the API from third grade to fourth grade went from 745 to 839. And there was the corresponding increases in fifth grade as well across the board, language arts, and especially in science. We did very well at Cameron in science in fourth and fifth grades. Fifth grade, not fourth. According to the AYP analysis and subgroup information, in language arts overall, we dropped by 2.2, which brought us to about 45.9. As you know, the district goal is 56% or 56.5 for 2010. We got a long way to go. Overall, math decreased by less than a point, but still 0.6%. Second and third grade proficiency levels are at 30 and 33% respectively, which is problematic when you look at the trends in our second and third grade scores, and I'll talk about that in just a moment. Special education and language arts is 18.2, but math increased by 16.5%, and they're at 46.7% now, and I'd like to address some of the reasons for that a little later. Second and third grade proficiency across the board, proficient and above, has remained flat for the past 3 years. Big problem in terms of determining what to do. Last year, I came to you and I said we were going to have very focused, tightly delivered professional development. I thought we did. A lot of it was pacing guides, student engagement, differentiation, and data analysis, which are the pillars of education and the implementation of effective strategies. As I look at it, obviously what we had was inconsistent application and a lack of fidelity to the degree that is necessary to bring our kids where they need to be. There's no hiding that. We didn't do what we had to do in order to get where we want to go. We did use software. We went very significantly into purchasing Waterford, Accelerated Reader, and a few other programs that we use. The implementation of both of those programs was late in the year for a number of reasons. We just didn't get everything where we needed it in the computer lab and on our computers to begin to have a full year of implementation. Accelerated Reader has supplanted the power reading program they had at Cameron for about 20 years. Moving our people off-center into a new program was a large task. We now have the entire school doing Accelerated Reader in the computer lab, in the library, and in the classrooms. On a very positive note, our classroom management techniques and strategies have been very effective in terms of controlling the classroom environment and having students understand procedures and protocols. When you walk or anybody walks into the classrooms at Cameron, my teachers are in control. So that brings us to what we're going to do this year. Together with our superintendent, our assistant superintendents, and other personnel from the district, we have analyzed what has gone on at Cameron, what's worked well and what hasn't worked quite so well. Number one component is absolute fidelity to the core curriculum. You can purchase all the materials and the latest materials and the best materials in the world, but if we're not implementing them with any type of fidelity, it's money not well spent. That has to be a paramount importance. We have already begun differentiation through the targeting of students far below basic in order to impact our API and basic to impact our AYP. We are in the process of beginning supplemental instructional support, especially in Orchard, and we've actually already begun intervention tutoring before and after school at the upper grade levels. We will be on board very soon with school-wide supplemental instruction and tutoring. We have Waterford and Orchard, Waterford grades K through 2, Orchard grades K through 5, ready to go and up and running right now. Accelerated Reader, again, is school-wide in the computer lab, the library, and the classrooms. In addition, we have all the materials necessary to begin a writing program school-wide, Step Up to Writing, which many other schools have already implemented. We started about halfway through the year and had varying success. We are up and running right now with Step Up to Writing for the entire school. Something else that we've done is we've had collaborative grade level meetings together in the library. Ordinarily, a grade level meeting is conducted in the grade level classroom where they discuss the things that are ordinarily pertinent to grade levels, concerns, and issues. This year, we've done it in our library together, every grade level sitting at a different table, collaborating with one another, but under the direction of me, and working and sharing, and it's actually been pretty effective. Tomorrow, we have another grade level meeting, which will be the first one this year where they will be in their respective grade level leader classrooms working on specific tasks that we've already articulated and focused on. And again, the differentiation, creation of meaningful lesson plans, designing and analyzing the content of the lesson plan to make sure that we're hitting the higher order concepts through Bloom. It does no good at all if you are continuing to focus on the first and second level of Bloom when what you really need to do is go to the higher levels of synthesis and analysis. We've already begun assessing benchmarks, making sure that the benchmarks are informing our instruction, monitoring classroom performance, taking Waterford and Orchard online assessments, and we've started a program of cross-curricular articulation vertically, which means that I have three strands of teachers from K through 5th at Cameron, and they will meet once each trimester to discuss issues that happen above and issues below their grade level, and to understand there are commonalities between what they're doing in second or third grade, what's happening at fourth and fifth grade. When you look at my fourth and fifth grade data, you say they're doing a pretty good job. When you look at my second and third grade data, you say, not so good. What's happening? Well, we can't get to where we are in fourth and fifth grade without the foundation that's been set in second and third grade, and we can't get to second and third grade proficiency until we've really set the tone in kindergarten and first grade. And so vertical articulation will allow the Cameron teachers to see how their relationship with their students and how their instruction and what they do in the classroom impacts people next year and next year and next year. I think it's going to be very valuable. And all this is going so that we develop a single common school-wide language. This is absolutely critical. We have to be talking the same language. We have to be doing the same things. Under fiscal and human resources, one of the things that we've already done is to identify students who are below proficient at Cameron. There are 110 of them, and they're on my intervention list. We intend to do Orchard before school, after school, and then targeting special Saturdays to make sure that our kids are hitting the standards and all the gaps in between the standards and everything that goes with that. In terms of personnel, we've had some major changes at Cameron. We have a different RSP teacher. We have a highly gifted instructional support specialist. We collapsed a second grade class, made a 4-5 combo, and we have a K-1 combo. We had to hire a new teacher the middle of September because although our projected enrollment is 414, as of this afternoon, it was 445. Great news. But it required reconfiguring of a whole bunch of stuff at Cameron. We've done that. We've made some major changes. We have a second grade teacher last year, is now a fifth grade teacher. And that's actually going very, very well. And so I'm encouraged, but we've been through a lot of changes. Under instructional materials, arguably the most important thing we've done is to purchase Standards Plus and to make sure that it is implemented daily in language arts and mathematics from kindergarten until fifth grade. This is critical. All of my teachers have begun to implement Standards Plus. And on technology, the threshold to the future lies in technology. We have a state-of-the-art computer lab, 40 computers arranged this summer in pods of six. I know that number doesn't add up, but we have some extras on the side. And our kids are in there every single day, beginning in the beginning of the day, ending at the end of the day, and we are really going deeper into the instructional efficacy of technology, especially Orchard, Waterford. We have several other math programs, and you know the power of technology with today's kids. They're very different from when I was a kid, when possibly you were a kid, and certainly even the last 5 to 10 years, the kids have changed, and they are turned on by technology. And so we intend to take that technology inclination and focus that and direct that to greater learning and achievement. These are the action steps. Continue to focus assessment of students' abilities by meeting with teachers and discussing that. I have done so with every teacher. That was to be completed by October the 10th, and it was. We have begun the implementation of Standards Plus. It was effective October the 20th, which was Monday. All teachers are doing Standards Plus. We have the Waterford program. Actually, we've had the Waterford program for the past 6 months or so. That is continued. We have the Orchard program up and running, and just we've added the kids to the software rosters, and we're ready to go with that. We will continue to monitor instruction and student learning because that's the name of the game, and we are to make sure that we have tightly focused professional development. One of the things we've done this year is that we have eliminated the general staff meeting, which took up one Wednesday out of every month. Usually the first Wednesday of the month was a general staff meeting. No longer. Every single Wednesday is staff development, professional development. The first Tuesday of every month, we have our general staff meeting. And that's from 2:30 to 3:30. And that's actually going quite well. It gives me one extra day to work with the teachers and to have them work amongst themselves. We will continue to design and analyze benchmark data, not so much designing, but a whole lot of analyzing and the designing lesson plans surrounding that to inform instruction. We've done something else that I think is very significant, and if you've been to Cameron at our back-to-school night or one of the other things we've had, you've seen our new Parent Resource Center. We completely gutted a Portable A, and we refurnished that with a wonderful library, tables for resources for meeting, for collaborating among the PTA. We've had several workshops already, and we are reaching out to the community, the likes of which I haven't seen in quite a long while. I've included in the folders that I gave you a copy of the October PTA newsletter and a copy of our events for the year. And as you read through that, if you do, when you do, will be you'll see the parent connections that we're trying to make. And, of course, our logo for this year is Building Bridges to Our Future. Can't do it without the parents. Can't do it without the community. It's one of those components that has always been there but hasn't really been targeted. It is being targeted now with instruction and workshops for parents how to help their kids with their homework, English language workshops, a whole variety of workshops, some of which are being done by the PTA and others by Lori Wilde's instructional specialist. And, of course, we'll continue to work with teachers and staff to make sure that our focus is what it is and needs to be in order to implement effective practices. The evidence is obvious. We'll have grade-level agendas, minutes, handouts. We have lesson plans that I check weekly. My observations and the district observations, especially the district observations, have been invaluable because they give me a new set of eyes, a new perspective, and the debriefing has been very, very good. We'll continue with my in-service performance evaluations of my staff, making sure that the benchmarks and curriculum assessments are reviewed to modify instruction as necessary. And we've also created a data binder or portfolio for all the teachers that contains their previous year's class roster CST scores, benchmark scores of this year, CST data of their students this year, in order to have an informed discussion with their peers at grade level meetings and during the vertical articulation, what happened before, what's happening now, what you might expect later. Bottom line is and always will be student learning and achievement. Okay.
Mr. Spence, any questions?
I guess, has there been at Cameron, was there some kind of turnover? I mean, you mentioned the second grade teacher that went to fifth grade.
Yes.
I mean, is there some kind of like when we were talking with high school, for example, you know, I'm talking about math scores. There's a lot of turnover, obviously, in the math department. Has there been something like that focus that may explain some of the drop-off?
I don't know if it explains the drop-off. I mean, I wish it would. I wish I could say, you bet, here's what it is, and that's what happened. I'm not sure that's what happened. What we had was, because of declining enrollment, we lost a teacher, and we had a fifth-grade teacher actually volunteer to go to another school in for the good of the whole, which was phenomenal. And so he left and went to Orangewood. And then 3 weeks into the school year, we find out we've got more kids than we expected, and so we had to add a teacher, which was kind of ironic, but we did at a lower grade level.
But overall, there hasn't been that kind of turnover.
We have a new RSP teacher. The gal that had been with us for years is no longer with us. In terms of overall staff, no. We did take a second-grade teacher, move her to fifth grade. We collapsed a second-grade class. We have a 4-5 combo and a K-1 combo. And that's really all the change that we've had.
You looked at the data. Was there a difference in how kids performed, especially at that second, third, you know, or fourth grade level, of kids that had been continually within our school district and kids that had come in, you know, that year or the year before, or that kind of, those kids that we had from K, you know, 3 or 4 and had our continual educational environment, yep, or in kids that didn't?
I wish that I could tell you I had, but I have not. I've not looked at that data. The data I've looked at would be cluster data, and the data is of the groups as a whole. I haven't broken out the individual to determine who had been with West Covina for a certain period of time, or even further, who had been at another school that might be using a different language arts program, from SFA to up in court or something like that. So we can be taken a lot further, and
right.
your question is well taken, but the answer, unfortunately, is that I haven't had the time to do that yet.
So we don't know if any of those things might be factors in
I know anecdotally that we have a whole bunch of folks that came from Hacienda La Puente and various other districts into the school. And when I look at the new students that we have, 30 plus.
What do you mean they came in on permits, or
you know what? A whole bunch of folks showed up that week of registration the first year, and some of them had previously been in Hacienda La Puente and various other parts, but it seemed for some reason a whole bunch of folks from there. I don't have an awful lot of kids on permit, some, but not an awful lot. But we have had a whole cohort of people from other areas show up and need a place for their kid.
And do you know the numbers on that, I guess?
30 plus, approximately.
30 kids.
Approximately, yeah.
Okay. And then I guess if you were to pick one or two things that didn't work from your plan that last year, a lot of your plans repeated from last year, you know, one or two things that didn't work and one or two things that did work, what do you think they were?
Well, in terms of instruction, I would say that what really worked well is we analyzed data pretty darn well.
You didn't break out all those data?
I didn't take it to that degree. But in terms of overall data and achievement with who we have right now, we looked at data pretty well. What we didn't do was apply what we had learned in a way that really increased our student achievement. I think we can do that a lot better. I know we can do that a lot better. So they're part and parcel. We looked at it, but you know what? I wasn't as rigorous as I should have been in terms of the application. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Fuller?
Let me understand. You had an 18.2% proficiency in
language arts special ed, yeah.
And 46.7 proficiency.
You bet.
Are you running an inclusion model? No, I'm serious. Are you running an inclusion model?
Here's what I think is going on.
Is it an inclusion model, or how is your class structure in special ed?
If by inclusion model you mean do we have all of our kids there right now and they're getting instruction on a daily basis in all subjects, yes.
Across in a general ed classroom?
No. We don't have a model where we are mainstreaming. We do have some mainstreaming going on. You know what? I'm becoming confused. Would you give me your definition of inclusion model?
Well, it's basically that. You've taken your special ed population, you've included them into your general ed classroom.
We have
in an LRE type environment.
Right.
Are you?
We have done that, but only a few students qualify for that. And the ones who do are the ones who are proficient enough to make it in a general education classroom are being done actively, and have been.
How do you determine if they're qualified?
Well, with the teacher and looking at the student assessments.
Isn't that done at the IEP?
It certainly is.
So if they come in, how are we saying that our attitude is only a few can go in, or are we saying as many as can go in?
I'm saying as many as can go in, we need to get them there under LRE.
Why would we keep any out?
The only reason, and just pragmatically, and I'm not speaking special education law, pragmatically, you don't want to put a kid in an environment where they're going to be over the head and not be able to function. And I'm not discriminating against kids that might have specific learning disabilities. We don't want a child going into a classroom if they can't, if they're not going to benefit from it.
So there wouldn't be any form of support that you could work with a general ed teacher?
Oh, we certainly do. Those students who have been mainstreamed have had an aide go in with them to assist them during that portion of time and have had additional scaffolding and instructional modification by the general education teacher done in consort with the SDC teacher via the IEP.
Well, what I'm looking at is I'm looking at success. I'm looking at a 46.7% proficiency level in mathematics in a special ed population. I think that's probably one of the highest in the district and probably one of the highest I've seen around. It seems like if we can extrapolate what's going in that classroom and transfer it into the general ed classroom, we would have something ongoing that would not only benefit the student but benefit all students.
I think we have multiple things going on. The first one is a CMA. The CMA is very visually oriented, and a lot of our kids have really benefited from that. The second one is that we have highly focused and individualized math instruction at the SDC level. These gals really know what they're doing, and they're able to use our Saxon math, they're able to use Houghton Mifflin, and they have supplemental materials that have been very, very focused, and our kids have benefited from it. I don't think it's serendipitous. I think other than the CMA component, which I don't know how much that can be analyzed that, but I think the highly focused instruction using the core curriculum and additional resources have been very effective. And again, we're not talking about an awful lot of kids and numbers. When you get 32 in special ed in SDC, it doesn't take an awful lot of kids achieving very well in that population to make it appear that we have a really high performing group of kids, and we do to an extent, but to the general population, when special ed is 8% of my population, it's a small group of kids. I think it's highly focused instruction with a little boost from CMA, and I think the gals in SDC are doing what they really need to do, and the kids are benefiting from it.
Mm-hmm. I'll comment later at the end of the meeting. Anyway.
Ms. Willis?
You had, and I might have missed it, I thought you were going to tell us why you thought there was a difference in the special ed between the math and the language arts.
Well, that's a tough one. When you have a population that has struggled, especially in language, for a long, long time, the gains that you're going to see in that particular area are incremental. We have an opportunity in math because of the visual component of mathematics and the spatial orientation that it requires, which many of our kids have, that that really translate into mathematics achievement. It doesn't necessarily translate into language arts. And so there is a real dichotomy here between performance and language arts and mathematics. And I think there are a whole bunch of factors that would be pretty complicated in that. But bottom line, simplistic response, I think math lends itself to a whole bunch of different intellectual components that kids are able to tap into when they're focused correctly.
And excuse me for using Tony's first name, but I cannot remember your last name. But I just wanted to say that she, in the past when I visited her room, I've always seen a lot of inclusion. And I've really appreciated how she's tried to tie in her students with in all the core areas or as many as possible. And I know it depended on the makeup of her class at the time on how much she could do that. So some years she could really do it, and other years she had to pull back. So since we brought that up, I know that she's done some really innovative things there that I hadn't seen done in other places. And if she hasn't been able to do it this year, hopefully she'll be able to get more into it. But I know she's told me in the past, as it is, you never know the makeup your makeup of the class from year to year. But if it's going to happen, I could see it happening there. The other question I have is, you talked about a lot of new technologies.
Yes.
Do all the teachers feel comfortable at this time using all that technology?
No.
Okay.
Absolutely not.
And what do you think the learning curve will be for that?
I think for some it'll be very, very steep. I think for some it's going to be very, very difficult. I had a person 2 years ago, my person got there, asked me how to use a mouse. Okay? So that was difficult. But we've moved beyond that. And I'll tell you what, most veteran teachers, and I don't mean to generalize about any specific group, but usually the most veteran teachers are the ones that are a little more resistant to learning new strategies and techniques. My kindergarten and first grade teachers are very veteran, but they have taken to Waterford and the other software we have in a spectacular way. And our kindergarten and first grade kids are there twice a week. And some of these teachers have really surprised me with how willing they are to go to a place which is pretty dangerous for them, because they're pretty comfortable doing things the old way. And now as they start to do these new things, they're enjoying it, they're having fun with it, and they're becoming proficient with it. Will everybody at Kamen be proficient? Absolutely. Someday, not right now, but we will do everything we can individually and collaboratively to bring everybody along, because they have to be along. This is where we're going in the future, whether we like it or not.
It looked like to move the school along, these were some of the programs you have implemented. If the teacher does not feel comfortable with it, I'm assuming there's going to be other staff that go in and assist that teacher. And then, in your learning labs, I'm sure there's somebody there.
We do. We have a spectacular learning lab person who works with all the classes and all the teachers. And we have Mrs. Wilds in the classrooms and in the computer lab. And Mrs. White, our librarian, is here. And she is also very, very proficient with technology. Accelerated reader. She really helped me kick that off at the school. So, you know, I feel pretty good about it, but if I had to judge how far along we were, pretty good. A few need to be pulled along with us, and they will be, or they'll be swept away. We have staff development regularly and will continue regularly in order to bring up our tech skills.
At our last meeting, we had the high school do a presentation, and they were talking about the teachers getting together and talking about their individual test scores and the strengths and weaknesses of their particular classroom. And then they were saying, it looks like you're really strong in teaching a certain portion of the curriculum, and another teacher may not be as strong. They were sharing with each other what their strategies were to get the types of scores they were doing. And you're saying you're looking at the scores, and the teachers are meeting on a regular basis. Are they collaborating that way also?
They have to. That's the direction that's being given to them, and they've been given all data as well. And data has been broken down by standards, so they can say, I have a second grade teacher who's a phenomenal math teacher, not so strong in language arts, but a phenomenal math teacher. In a staff meeting, we say, what are you doing? Share with what you're doing. And it's very, very powerful, because when you teach to your strength, you know what you're doing. And if you can help somebody else who doesn't have that strength, it's called collegiality and collaboration. And it's the power of the individual working in a group. And it's awesome when it works well. I agree 100%. And that's, yes, ma'am, we are,
okay,
and shall.
I didn't want to assume anything.
No, please, no.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Cox?
I guess it's the same concerns that Mrs. Polis started to talk about. I don't quite understand this, where you say that this analysis of this 07-08, where we've been, especially in this software area with Waterford and Accelerated, mitigated by the late implementation. Late implementation, why?
Late in the year, because we didn't get the stuff. We didn't get the software. We didn't get everything set up. And we just weren't ready to go. And after we get, our Accelerated Reader program is an online, a web-based program, which is phenomenal, because we can tap into it from anywhere on the property. But we need to have student rosters. We need to have the teachers trained. We need to have everybody ready to go. And we didn't even get the stuff until, I think, February, or maybe a little after that. And so it was a task just getting it organized and establishing procedures. We have it now. We've had it. And we have it school-wide, and we're ready to go. Next year at this time, I won't be able to use that as an excuse, because we will have had a full year to implement and get its best impact. I don't intend to be able to use it.
What, we've tested it in other schools and then just recently implemented it?
Waterford?
At Waterford?
Many other schools have it, yeah. Huh? Many other schools have it. We just got it.
Okay. That's a shame, because it's extraordinary. And
of course, the cost is extraordinary, too.
I say you did it much more tactfully than I, but as to your reference to veteran teachers, but my goodness, it is not particularly difficult to implement, and I truly mean no disrespect, but the kindergartners virtually do it themselves, and it is a phenomenal opportunity and a phenomenal resource, and, you know,
well, I concur.
We'll talk more, and so it's hopefully certainly hopeful that you will implement and make sure that they do understand that it's
fully implemented as we speak.
Yeah. That's all I have.
Mr. Spence has a follow-up question.
And it dealt with the question that Mrs. Polis brought up concerning teachers. And you talked about that they're either pulled along or they're swept away.
Right.
And I guess the question I have is, at what point is a teacher's inability to be able to use everything provided to them from the district, when does that start showing up in their evaluations?
It has to show up this year, immediately. However, and we were speaking specifically about technology in reference to...
Well, that was one thing, but I mean...
Generally speaking, teacher efficacy, teacher ability, teacher proficiency, is there a more impactful component than how well the teacher does what they're supposed to do? There's not.
That's why I asked the question about... If there's teachers that don't have the ability for whatever reason, you know, to implement, you know, the programs that we have to work, when does that start showing up? I have not seen anything like that come across, you know, our way.
Well, the documentation process and the conference process and the working with process and giving opportunities to succeed and to train can be an attenuated process. As quick as I would like to say, you're not doing it, I need somebody else right now, Mr. Spence, can you give me a new teacher? That's not the way the system works. It requires a preponderance of documentation, which has been done, I assure you, without any type of equivocation, that there are volumes of documentation relative to the performance of my teachers, both positive and some not so positive. And it's how I'm trying to deal as the instructional leader at the school with deficiencies that I see, and there are some glaring. And again, that is forthcoming. It is always on my mind, and it's part and parcel of the evaluation process, formal and informal. I take it very seriously, and I hear what you're saying.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Manning.
Thank you very much.
I
We're going to
introduce her.
And Ms. Ballas, one other thing. I often forget her last name, too. But Ms. Mines is a wonderful SDC teacher and a tremendous resource to me and the rest of the staff.
Does she teach? Excuse me.
Pardon me?
You said SDC?
Upper grade special day class.
Who?
Ms. Mines, right here. Ms. Mines, would you please wave your hand?
Yes.
Tony Mines. She's very, very good.
Nice lady.
Thank you.
One of the glasses on.
I wanted to introduce all staff. I don't know why they did it.
Need a couple minutes?
Yes, we're just taking a few minutes to
okay.
Let you set up and
no problem.
Remember stretch. Yes.
Can you go get ice cream?
Yeah. Oh, but cheesecake. I hope he gets them for all of us.
Go get ice cream.
No, I didn't. I got a few.
I know.
She would have had. He would have had to invite everybody for that.
I know.
Did she try to steal my drink?
What's that?
Oh. He wanted to make sure Margo didn't get it. He's smart.
Just giving her recognition. She wouldn't raise her hand.
Yeah, I told Ruben that.
Singling her out. Took the cue. Yeah.
They're ready when you are.
I'm ready. I'm sorry. Let's do it.
Good job.
Is there any cat from that? No.
No.
Didn't we put sixth grade back up?
Yeah. Good. So you asking me.
Okay. Our next item is a presentation from Monta Vista Elementary School.
Thank you. Thank you, distinguished board members and cabinet, for allowing me to come before you tonight and share with you Monta Vista's student achievement plan. My name is Elizabeth Sims. I'm the principal of Monta Vista. This is Joyce Savoy, my ISS, as well, in case anybody doesn't know. First slide shows we continue to have purposeful and meaningful programs at Monta Vista, even though our API dropped 3 points. Last year's fifth graders showed the greatest improvement by increasing their API 116 points. Our English language arts percent of proficiency increased 15%, and second grade's API dropped 50 points. Our AYP increased in math for last year's fifth grade by 22%. Our English language arts dropped in second through sixth grade by 2%. Our overall English language arts proficiency dropped 22%, and in math we dropped 21%. Third grade has remained relatively flat in English language arts proficiency at 25%. Our math AYP dropped about 5%. English language arts AYP remained relatively flat at 44%. And our sixth grade had the lowest percent proficiency of all grades at 36%. In our analysis of last year's action steps, we focused on bubble students in our data. Those are the students who are approaching the next level band. When we looked at the data, we were surprised they didn't make the progress we had anticipated. Our professional development focused on step up to writing and differentiated instruction. We are at the developmental stage and continuing to train this year. Waterford, all our kindergartners and teachers have been doing Waterford for 5 years now. We also trained our first grade teachers last year. We purchased 2 sixth grade smart boards last year, and the teachers went to all the trainings and even found more to learn from and attended those too on their own time. Fourth through sixth grade teachers were trained by a staff member in the summer of 2008. My professional development is based on a needs assessment. My staff will be trained on integrating the Step Up to Writing format using our current English Language Arts program of Open Court. All teachers will be evaluated on specific goals and objectives and teaching our programs with fidelity, including the implementation of Standards Plus in both language arts and math. We will continue differentiated instructional training as well as continue to implement effective EL strategies. We also will be utilizing experts on our campus for much of our training, including smart board implementation for our 9 smart boards.
How many?
Did you like that?
9.
9?
9.
Who's funding that?
Are we forwarding out comments now?
Yeah.
Is this going against my time?
Sorry.
Okay, there's 5 minutes now. Right. 9 minutes.
My staff continues to analyze data. We use benchmarks, blueprints, summative, and evaluative data to effectively evaluate our teaching practices. Our lesson development integrates the key standards in Open Court, incorporating effective instructional techniques while integrating science and social science. Monte Vista's teachers collaborate on effective practices in key standards-based instruction. We are preparing to integrate lesson design using the Step Up to Writing strategies with Open Court. And all my teachers align and adjust their lessons using the pacing guides and grade level standards while gearing up for benchmarks. This year, I reallocated funds to purchase Standards Plus in both language arts and math in grades kindergarten through 6th. My staff has been trained and has begun implementation, and training will continue throughout the year. We have 4 brand new student computers in each 5th and 6th grade classroom. We also purchased the 9 smart boards for all students in grades 4 through 6th. All teachers in grades 2 and 3 have access to a projection machine. I would like to upgrade the computers in the kindergarten classes so that they can continue to use the Waterford program and all older teacher computers throughout the campus. Currently, I'm exploring using Orchard as our after-school intervention program. It, too, will reinforce the standards. We're in the process of using Orchard for pre- and post-test data, using and having all students take the 4-year state, which will allow the teachers to design an individual plan of action for each student. For our action steps, we are implementing all core programs with fidelity. We're implementing the Step Up to Writing program with our existing Open Court. Students and teachers will be able to articulate what they're learning and why with the use of standards and objectives posted daily. We'll be taking a look at maximizing our instructional minutes and time on task. There is frequent monitoring of teaching and learning at alternate times. We always have purposeful and meaningful professional development, and we are evaluating the intervention programs in Open Court and Orchard to use in the classroom, during YASIS, and after-school intervention tutoring. As evidenced, you'll see teachers teaching standards and students able to articulate the learning objectives. You will see much purposeful and meaningful professional development, all designed to increase student achievement. Lesson plans are always in full view. I have frequent meetings with teachers, always articulating student improvement and needs. We will continue to analyze data towards improving instruction while using benchmarks, summative, and informal observations. My teachers fully expect frequent observations and walkthroughs by district focused on student achievement. We understand we are working towards student success and are very willing to increase student achievement with the many valuable resources of programs and experts in our district. Our goal is always 800 by 2010. Thank you.
Mr. Spence?
I had a question. You said at the beginning that we're in the developmental stage, and I don't know what you mean by that.
Well, we have new programs not all programs, but new ways, strategies that were implemented or introduced last year. Speaking specifically of differentiated instruction, Step Up to Writing. And anytime you introduce a new program or a new strategy, it does take time and practice to implement.
So when you say that you're in the developmental stage, it means not everybody's doing it or not doing it well? Or
absolutely not, no. We were one of the few schools who took the whole year for Step Up to Writing training and took advantage of every available in-service workshop, you might call. All my teachers attended. This year we're continuing with the model classrooms are in what's the other one? Steps to, thank you, Standards Plus. The differentiated instruction is also something that they're in the planning state, in the working stages of, and it just takes time to implement and see some success.
What's the next stage then?
The next stage, we're going to be using the Step Up to Writing program with our Open Court, integrating lesson designs and making sure that our lessons fully show the Step Up to Writing process.
Okay, so I mean, but I mean, I guess I'm a little confused what you mean by developmental stage, because it sounds like you can always be in the developmental stage because you're learning new things and then you're
right.
doing things. I don't know, is there another stage like the implementing stage or I mean, the stage where
actually we're a little farther than that. Last year my teachers were evaluated on the Step Up to Writing, using the Step Up to Writing strategies that they were trained in, and now we're taking it a step further with making sure that it is applying to our Open Court.
Okay, you said you're going to, in the action steps, now those are all things you were trying to do last year too, right?
There's a slide for 07, 08 action steps.
Well, the action steps for this year.
And there's one for this year too.
Right, and...
So the one this year is towards the back?
Yeah, the one towards the back.
The new ones for 08, 09 with
right.
the green steps.
Well, you talked about your professional development. There's not a graph, I don't have a graph with what I have here.
I'm sorry, there's not a graph of professional development?
I'm talking about the second to the last slide. I'm talking about the second to the last slide.
Yes,
where it talks about
focus
professional
staff.
Development.
Yes,
she was.
Okay.
Yes.
You know, what things like that were not going, I know, well, I'm a little confused about Orchard because you said you're going to look at implementing that, and then
Correct.
You talked about evaluating it. So I'm a little confused on if you're doing it or you're not doing
no,
it.
No, we have not started Orchard yet. We have not used Orchard. We've just have it. We're actually training our teachers for the first day tomorrow.
Okay, because it says evaluate the intervention program. So I was a little confused on whether or not you had it or
We're,
not.
I am investigating using the Orchard for an after-school intervention program as well. It has not been decided yet.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so it is being used?
No, we're going to be trained tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and then it will be used after tomorrow.
Hopefully, yes. That's the goal. That's the plan.
So you will be using it then?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then I guess the other question is, you know, you've had water for the longest.
Yes, sir.
And how do you gauge whether or not that's effective?
Good question. I am not a Waterford expert, but what I've seen my teachers doing, they are fully engrossed in the Waterford. They love it. They feel that the students benefit from it. It is, as Mr. Cox did say, it's a fully student-supported system. The teachers run reports off of them, and they can see progress. They do see... we actually are using it at the first grade level as well this year. That's a brand new thing. And we're also using it for some second grade students who are still struggling at the very beginning levels of phonemic awareness, letter, sound recognition.
I guess the question I have is how are you evaluating what you're doing now? That because you have especially in the API, I think not this year but also the year before, it's gone down.
No.
And there's wild fluctuations in it.
Correct.
Between... And it's a little bit more stable with using the AYP, but there's still some pretty huge fluctuations.
Actually, last year we went up 16 points,
right.
And this year we went down 3. The year before that, we gained 22 points.
Right. But when you look, for example, at second grade in between 2007
yes.
and 2008.
Quite an anomaly.
72% to 50%.
Yes.
You know, which is back down to, you know, the 53 from before. I mean, that's
yeah.
a pretty huge kind of swing. I'm just trying to figure out. You know,
right.
I guess if you know what's going on that causes those kind of swings,
mm-hmm.
You know, do you look at the numbers of who's been in our program for a period of time and who's
Most definitely.
Not here?
The transiency rate at my school is quite high. That is a query that I could probably get for you first thing tomorrow morning. The students in my school and the students out of my school, that transiency rate. Also, you mentioned kindergarten through 6.
I guess the question, though, is there a difference? You know, is there a huge difference between kids coming into our school system and what our kids that have been here for a period of time have been scoring? That's
yes.
the thing I'm kind of looking at.
That would take a little bit more time to dissect and analyze. Back to your other question about the second grade, they did extremely well 2 years ago. Of course, there can be a lot of factors that play into that, a number of different things. Yes, my teachers analyze how they teach, what they teach, what processes they use, and they gain knowledge each year and teach that knowledge. Yes, there's a bunch of different mitigating factors that lead to that. One of the things that I did notice when I was looking at the cohort of that grade level is the third grade, which was second grade last year, that did so well, the cohort remained relatively flat.
Right.
So that's quite interesting, because usually the third grade does not do very well. So it does kind of match the rise grade. And fall.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because there just seems to be a lot of swings in some of the grades, and I'm just trying to figure out
right. Another thing you touched on in the other presentation was the teacher staffing. Mm-hmm. Yes, we've had 6 new teachers join us this year. We gained a second grade class. We also gained an enrollment, not significantly, but enough to create a class. So that was good growth for our school. Some teachers did change grade levels. Everything's working very well. Teachers at that second grade have remained relatively the same. There's just so many different factors that go into it. Students, environmental factors, many different things.
What kind of environmental factors are you talking about?
Anything the student might be going through at the home, personally. Certainly right now with the crisis that's going on in the state affects our students. We have families who are losing their homes. We have many different factors that are going on based on what our families are living through right now.
How did you see things affected with having sixth grade? Don't we have sixth grade at Monta Vista?
Mm-hmm. We did have a significant drop at the sixth grade. Can you compare that to anything? No. But they were the lowest. I think it was at Language Arts and Math. It's in the presentation. I don't have exact figures with me tonight.
They weren't on the graph.
Correct. That has been addressed, and I probably can get something to you shortly. But in the presentation, it did mention that sixth grade had scored quite low. We had anticipated that, looking at the benchmarks last year. I had 2 sixth grade classes. It was the first year of sixth grade. This year we have 3 sixth grade classes, 2 teachers who have taught it before.
Those are mostly kids that were in fifth grade at Monta Vista?
Those were what?
Are those mostly kids that were in fifth grade at Monta Vista?
From the sixth grade last year?
No.
I haven't looked at that.
Is there sixth grade classes made up mostly of fifth grade kids from Monta Vista?
Yes, sir. All of them. Okay. We did lose a tremendous amount of fifth grade to Edgewood this year. Mm-hmm. Quite a few. I think it was like in the 40s.
Do you remember what their AYP was approximately? I mean, sixth grade?
No, I don't have that with me. I only chose a couple charts to go along with the presentation. All the charts have been created and made. I can email those to you if you'd like.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Fuller.
You have a student with disability population.
Yes, I do.
How are you incorporating them in the classroom? How are you configuring?
Well, we have socioeconomically disadvantaged is a significant subgroup at my school. We also have 1 SDC class, which I think you may be speaking of 5th and 6th graders.
Okay. Are they being – how are you incorporating? Are you keeping them segregated? Are you
– Well, an SDC class is titled
I know – let me put it another way. I know students that have been classified in the district as special day class.
Yes.
That are in a general ed
correct.
Classroom 6 hours a day. Do you have that?
My SDC class does begin that way. The goal of the SDC teacher is not to keep them in the SDC class. His goal is to have everybody mainstreamed and out of SDC before they leave his class.
Okay, but at the beginning of the day, they're in this self-contained class.
At the beginning of the year and the beginning of the day, it depends on what the student can handle, what specific subject they can be mainstreamed into, and they are mainstreamed into that area with beginning with an aide and close communication with the teacher, making sure that it's successful for that student before it's continued. Right now we have 1 that's in there every single day.
Okay.
For certain subjects.
All right, and how do you develop that, scaffold it into the general ed?
It's in their IEP. It's discussed with the parent. It's the goal of the parent and the teacher. It's discussed with the regular education teacher. And my teachers are more than willing to have SDC students in their class because they know the ultimate goal is to get them into regular education.
How large is your RSP population?
14.
And they're all?
They're in regular education classrooms, and we have a push-in model as well as a pull-out model. And what that means is the RSP teacher or aide goes into the classrooms and supports the student as well as pulling them out for specific goals that aren't met in the classroom.
Okay. Go ahead.
How many new programs did you actually implement this year?
This year or last year?
This year.
Okay, this year we're the only brand new one. Well, there's two, Orchard and Standards Plus, both in language arts and math.
And then the first grade, Waterford.
Waterford. It was begun a little bit last year.
Okay.
The training of the teachers, but it happened last year. It was fully implemented at the beginning of this year.
Okay. And you talked about implementing intervention programs, and I might have misheard you. Did you say for each student?
Well, that was for the test for your state in Orchard, and what that test does is it tests the students at their grade level in their standards, and it pops out there's just hundreds of standards, and it tells the teacher exactly what standard the student is deficient in, and then a program can be developed by the teacher, and that student can do it both in the classroom, in YASIS, and during tutoring, and it doesn't overlap. The specifically designed program is that.
And Will, I know you haven't implemented the program yet. Are there plans for each student to the last presentation was there was 110 students that were going to have direct intervention. Are you planning on all of your students having intervention, or are you having a targeted intervention group?
Well, that's a very broad question. Intervention should be happening within the classroom during regular instruction. We also have intervention which can be called tutoring after school or before school. It is a voluntary basis, and it's usually taught by teachers. So it's up to the teachers if they choose to teach it. If we have enough teachers teaching it, we can service more students. Right now, we have approximately 150 students who could benefit from after-school intervention or tutoring. I am still looking into areas of how to service those students before and after school.
How many students are you servicing now?
None. It has not begun yet.
And you're not targeting any students in any program
No.
before or after school or on Saturday programs at this time?
We don't have a Saturday program. My teachers have bubble students. They have intervention students. They have AYP students, API students that they're specifically focusing on and providing strategies for. As I said, intervention happens within the classroom. That's our main goal. The intervention after school is a service that's provided by the state, and it can be offered at every site. It varies from site to site in how it's implemented.
How many students after school do you
have in YASIS? How many kids do you have in YASIS? Do you know?
Oh, in the YASIS program, 66.
That's currently the after school program.
Okay, the after school program is not intervention.
It's tutoring.
The after school program is the YASIS program. That's not an intervention.
They're your students.
I'm sorry?
They are your students.
They are my students.
And they're in tutoring.
YASIS might call that tutoring. It's not a proven intervention unless it specifically targets.
She's tripping up over your word intervention.
Okay. In the presentations in the past,
mm-hmm.
There have been students that have been targeted for intervention.
Okay.
And those students will get additional assistance
yes.
sometime during the day. Not normally inside of the classroom,
mm-hmm.
although hopefully everybody's getting some kind of individualized attention in the classroom, but outside of the normal day.
Uh-huh.
And so you're saying your OASIS program, or what I'm hearing Lily say, is that's where that's happening?
Right now, the Orchard program and all these programs she's talking about are being implemented, starting to be implemented in the after-school program. What she's saying is that she yet has to start a program of intervention after school or before school.
Correct.
But
we have targeted students.
Yeah. You said you had 150
correct.
Targeted students.
Yes,
correct.
Exactly.
And I was trying to figure out if all of those students were getting
support.
Support now, or if you're
not
planning
after
to do
school.
That in the future?
They might be in YASIS, but they're not being tutored.
So the question then is, how are those students getting support?
In the classroom, during the day, during regular teaching.
Okay.
Possibly during YASIS. I haven't overlapped those groups.
And that could happen in the near future?
It could.
Okay. In your special day class, for your 5th and 6th grade, did any of the 6th grade students that were in the special day class opt out of your program and decide to go to Edgewood? Because you said there was 40
Actually,
students that opted to do that.
More likely to happen with our special ed department is we encourage our parents to send them back to the elementary site for that one more year before they go to Edgewood. So we've actually had, I could think of at least two, possibly three cases where the student was brought back to my site instead of going to Edgewood, and the parents fully agreed that they needed that one more year before going to Edgewood.
Were they students that were Monta Vista students
no,
to begin
not
with?
No, always. Not always. They might, obviously, they probably came from a K-5 school.
Okay. And so in the regular, for the regular ed students, you had 40 leave, but you had two to three additional students come into your special day class for your 6th grade.
Correct.
I might have one more. Oh, your smart boards.
Yes.
How are they being used? You said you had it in 4th through 6th. I saw them in your 6th grade classes. I haven't seen them in your 4th and 5th grade classes. And I knew there was a learning curve for your 6th grade, which is to be expected, and it sounds like they took you up on, even on their own, found opportunities
yes.
to learn how to utilize that. What about the 4th and 5th grade? Are they in that learning curve now?
Yes. They were more than part of the carrot to have a smart board in your classroom was to agree to go through the training and implement the smart board in their daily lessons and classroom. All my 4th and 5th grade teachers did attend the summer training and will have the opportunity to attend the extra trainings that the 6th grades have already attended. They are on all day long in the classrooms. They are being implemented at different various degrees, but the teachers are extremely excited, love the use of it. Students love the technology. Parents love it. It's a huge success.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay.
Just a quick follow-up. How did these students get chosen to come back and find this?
From Edgewood to the SDC class?
Yeah.
They weren't chosen. Based on their IEPs, they might not have been as successful. They may have tried Edgewood. It might not have been as successful in the transition between classes. Talking with the parents, I did not speak to the parents before they came to the school, but I understand in talking to the parents understood that they would be more successful in the SDC class for one more year, as would most sixth graders before going to middle school.
How was this implemented? I mean, they weren't your students to start with.
Not all of them. Just two or three. I think it's definitely two, possibly three, came back to my site.
What kind of supports were they offered at Edgewood before they were chosen to go back?
That I wouldn't know, sir.
You don't know?
No, sir, I don't.
It just came back.
Well, it's in the IEP. They were spoken to, okay. They were talked to.
You don't know the answer.
You know,
don't know the answer.
I accepted them with open arms.
Okay.
And they're doing very well.
Thank you. I don't believe we have any further questions. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Report of action taken in closed session. It was moved by Mr. Fuller, seconded by Mrs. Polis, to expel the following pupils from the schools of the district. Student number 182904 for violation of Ed Code 48900 subsection C and K and violation of Ed Code 48915 subsection 3 C3 for possession of marijuana for sale. Student number 194364 for violation of Ed Code 48900, subsection C and K, possession of marijuana. Student number 187256 for violation of Education Code 48900, section C, possession of marijuana. Student number 194089 for violation of Education Code 48900, subsection C and K, possession of marijuana. And finally, student 160368 for violation of Education Code 48900, subsections F and K, graffiti. The vote was 5-0. These pupils are expelled and will not be eligible to apply for readmission until the date set in their rehabilitation class. I do not have a report. Is there any other board member who has a report? Seeing none, we'll move on to the student representative report.
Well, West Covina High School just got done with our homecoming this weekend. It was a great success, a way to end my senior year. thank you to all the school board members who came to the football halftime show. Hope you guys enjoyed that. November 4th and 5th next week is our KC testing. And also November 3rd is our stump day. And what that is that all the social science classes meet each period, and there are a group of students who have done research on each candidate. And it's just an informational meeting, so high school students have a more informed thing about the election. And November 4th is our school-wide mock election, where we could see the results of what our high school students voted on each president. So that's the 3rd and the 4th. November 7th, which is next Friday, is our Renaissance Collegiate Rally, and it's to promote academic achievement and kick off the college application season. And November 12th is our Veterans Day Assembly, and November 13th is our disaster drill for earthquakes. That's it.
Okay. Our next thing is items from the floor, public comment. I have received one card, and that is John Nolte.
Hi, I appreciate the opportunity to speak before you. My name is John Nolte. I'm in the law offices of Maureen Graves. I'm an attorney, and I represent the student in the due process special education matter that's before the district right now. And this is actually a first for me. We don't make it a practice of appearing before boards frequently in our cases. But this is a case we feel that has kind of gotten out of hand without any better way to put it. And I think I'd just like to express some of the reasons why we think that's happened and ask that you, basically I'm here to ask that you pay some attention to this case and take a look at some of the materials that we've emailed to you today. All of you should have received them, and I'll leave my business card if you have any more questions. Let's see. Basically, last spring and summer, our office represented the student in an 8-day hearing, which took many more days than that for a briefing, et cetera, in which we essentially mainly won the case. Now, that case was costly for the district, it was costly for the family, and now we find ourselves facing basically four additional hearing procedures. First of all, on November 5th, we have a SARB hearing. On November 6th, they'll be starting a 5-day hearing that was filed by the district on their offer of placement for this year. They'll be bearing the burden of proof to prove that their offer is appropriate in that filing. Then we have an appeal on the case from the spring, where we're appealing the judge's decision not to offer compensatory education or to reimburse the parents for their educational evaluations, and also retaliation under the ADA and Rehabilitation Act. And then assuming if the district were to lose the hearing that's going forward on November 6th, there'll be another hearing that would be filed for reimbursement for the private placement that the parent has currently placed the student in. And all except, and possibly on the SAR, but at least on the other three hearing processes, attorney's fees would be owed to our office in the event of the student prevailing. So we just want to make you aware that there is significant exposure for the district and ask that you consider whether this is an appropriate way to spend public funds. I haven't been with the firm for more than 4 years, but my office, you know, has been in existence for 15 years. We can't remember a time when we've had two hearings about the same student. Generally, when you have a hearing and the issues are decided, that provides, the ability for the parties to come to a resolution on the rest of the issues. So this is actually something that we haven't experienced very often before either. Another thing I'd like to ask is that the board look into some of the hardball tactics that the council for the district has been involved in. This is a student who, up until recently, his parents had him going to, or his mother had him going to a private placement in the morning to receive intensive and structured instruction in the areas that he needs remediation, and then he would attend school in three classes in the afternoon that the mother had approved in the IEP process for him to attend. Then recently the district, and then after that he would also participate in sports in the district. For inexplicable reasons, the district has changed the schedule such that the three classes that were not approved by the mother are now in the afternoon after he receives the private instruction. So if he's going to go to school at all, he has to attend classes that, you know, the mother has in the IEP process decided inappropriate. He's therefore not able to participate in sports anymore. He's becoming very emotionally upset about this and, you know, is beginning to believe that his disability means that he can't participate in, you know, the things that he finds fun and rewarding. Another issue here is CIF sports. He hasn't been able to compete in them, and one thing that the district or that the board could consider is allowing him to have credit for the private schooling that he's receiving so that he would have enough credits to participate in CIF sports. And some of the emails we provided today explain that process. The district was, in fact, ordered to pay for the private schooling and to award credit for that in the prior due process hearing. And if the board was to agree to do that, he would be able to participate in sports and would basically wipe out a lot of, you know, some of the major issues in the due process filings and in the appeal. I'd also like to mention that we believe that the SARB process is being used inappropriately and to harass the family in this case. Federal law allows a parent, when they disagree with a placement, to give notice and withdraw a student into a private placement. There's nothing in federal law that requires that private placement to have any sort of certification. That's a right that's guaranteed, and to essentially use the SARB process to contradict what's in federal law is, you know, we see that as essentially using another process to harass the family in this case. Just a few more points. I'd like to suggest if you're going to read, there's a lot of documents that we provided. If you read only one, I would suggest reading Dr. Caroline Bailey's report. She was an expert in the case last time and will be one in some of our further proceedings. She's a psychologist. And if you look at that, she has many suggestions for how I think the funds that are currently being spent in litigation could be more wisely used to, you know, improve both special and general education in the district. And these are needs that go even beyond the district's obligation to provide an education for the student. Finally, we will be providing a settlement offer. We hope that you will look at that carefully. This is a student who has very specific learning needs which are being provided for. All he wants to do is continue to make progress in his education, to come to school when it's appropriate, and to participate in the sports, which he finds very rewarding. We hope that you'll review these documents and consider his needs, and that's why I came here today. Thank you.
I have no further cards. Is there anybody else who would like to address the board? Okay, seeing none, we will move on to our business session. Are there any items that a board member would like to remove from consent?
I'd like to take off item number 3.
There's nothing to add. had. So do I have a motion?
Moved as amended.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Moving on to item number 3. Mr. Spence, you asked this to be removed?
Yes. I was a little confused by the amount of money that we're paying for something that looks like it's a joint consultant arrangement, since the teaching is going to be done by the Almost Dr. Maine on the Glendora campus. And I was just confused because it said $1,500. That seems a lot. I don't know how many of our BITSA people are participating in it, but we don't have that many teachers that are enrolled in BITSA, and I don't know who's going out to Glendora, but it just seems a lot of money for a consultant that's going off campus if we're, I assume we're sharing the cost.
Mrs. Pickett?
Actually, we're not paying for this at all. The BITSA consortium is paying for this. It's all the districts in our consortium who have new teachers. So all the new teachers in our 5 districts will be participating in this.
Right, and it says, but $1,500 is coming from BITSA program funds.
From the BITSA funds, yes. It's not district funds.
It's our consortium.
Yeah, and we authorize the money for the consortium?
Yes.
Every district has to.
We're the lead.
Okay, yeah, but okay. Well, now I'm a little bit confused. So the total thing for all the other districts is $1,500,
right.
And that's coming from all the other districts.
BITSA
money,
yes,
is coming from all the other,
yes,
districts.
And
okay, into the one fund, and $1,500 is coming.
Correct.
Out of that.
Correct.
Great. Thank you. I'll move this item.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes, when she's a doctor.
Hey.
All in favor?
5,000.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries 5-0. Okay. Any further Board of Education discussion?
Yes.
Mr. Fuller?
Yes. Tonight, I said I would comment. I want to make sure our principals understand what the word inclusion means and how least restrictive environment fits into that. And let me just say, from my attitude and from where I came from, and I'll age myself, I came from a high school where there wasn't any laws at all. And through the grace of the principal and what he was able to work out with the district, there were students with disabilities at the high school who were told they couldn't do the work, that it wasn't there, that we were not to associate with them, and in fact, they had a bit different bell schedule, so we basically didn't see them. Having had a nephew, or a cousin rather, with Down syndrome, and seeing these children at that age, I didn't buy it. As I went through my career and entered education, I didn't buy it. I still don't buy it now. I see a student with a disability, if given the proper support with research-based education, with the idea that we can, with the attitude we can educate them, they can get into the general ed environment, the general ed teacher giving the support. I know that it takes time consuming and takes time to get there, but we can't keep saying, well, it's difficult. We need to be moving forward. I know our director came from an outstanding institution that understands that, and it's a family affair. And I know we can do it along with the staff, and I like to see it can doing. In the same token, because I'm so adamant about student care, I really don't care what the student public funds is, and I don't want to hedge on any student for the best of that student to be making a deal because it will save us money. If my attitude with the superintendent and this staff is that they see a need and they can, then we go forward for that student, whatever the cost. Let anybody come in here and say, we will take you on. We stand behind our budget and ready to go for that student. So we are not here to babysit. We are here to develop students with disabilities. And we will do so, and we have the capability to do it. And we can develop a program that they can meet the demands of what's there to become an independent learner, independent citizen, self-supporting in our society. And that's where we're going, and I have all that there. I will be asking staff when they want to disseminate to everybody, but what these two or three students were that came from Edgewood to Monta Vista, how that came about, what strategies were tried to be implemented before they were moved, and the circumstances be there. So I can either call or we can disseminate it, but I'm curious about that situation. So.
Mr. Spence?
I don't know if it's appropriate to have an agenda item at our next meeting, but today the governor told the Education Coalition leaders that in addition to the tax increases that CSBA and him want, that there's probably going to be $2 to $4 billion worth of cuts in educational programs. And obviously they're talking about doing it mid-year. So I don't know if it's appropriate to talk about things like hiring freezes, so that we can evaluate positions as individuals leave. Because what I don't want to have happen is that, you know, when finally something's figured out and cuts are coming down, then suddenly we're cutting off, you know, arms and legs in order to, you know, try to make ends meet. I'd prefer that we looked at it as we had the opportunity as positions came up in our personnel report where people were leaving or, you know, looking at that kind of stuff. And I don't know. I know in the past, during difficult times, we have had hiring freezes that the board could lift, you know, after staff, you know, reviewed that position and saw that it was necessary that we hire them now and that there wasn't a better way to deliver that service. And I don't know if that's something that the board's interested in doing, but I'm interested in being kind of proactive and starting to look a little harder at those kinds of things before, you know, more bad news hits us somehow. So I'd like to have...
It's just a general information report.
Well, I wouldn't mind an action item. I wouldn't mind an action item, but staff can tell us how they think something like that could work. Like I said, we have done it before where we've had hiring freezes, and they're lifted after the staff has reviewed the position that became vacant and open and that there's not another way to provide it, and we have to fill it now and those kinds of things, and then the board could lift it or leave it in place. It's been kind of a flexible freeze. Kind of a thaw, I don't know, kind of runny water, but still cold. But something that, you know, we just need to take a look at stuff. I mean, our biggest cost is personnel, and that's not going to change. And if, you know, we take a major hit from whatever's decided in Sacramento, you know, we're kind of at their mercy. So, yes. Is that helpful?
It is helpful. I don't believe, until we have a better idea of what exactly the state is going to do, that we need to take action, but I would not be opposed to some sort of information report on areas where we may be able to freeze or trim something should the state go as far as they're hinting they will. And I don't believe that, you know, as of November 18th, we'll have enough information to even, like I said, take action.
Well, you know, we'll see. There's a special session that starts November 7th,
exactly.
Call for the 5th, so we might have information by the 18th.
We might, but we may not, so I'm hesitant to to agree to put something on the agenda as an action item on may or may not. So I'm fine with some sort of information report. Ms. Lace Castillo would...
Well, I need to know if the board is fine with that. I mean, is it just you and Mike, or is it the board? What do you want me to say?
Well, I mean, I could be. I'm trying to be a little bit collaborative here, rather than saying I want it on the agenda.
I know.
This way.
I know. That's why I'm
and
saying.
And I could do that. But I'm not doing it.
I understand. One of the things that we could do that I think would be productive is to talk about basic principles of the things that are, you know, if you look at things that are a must, and then things that move from outside that into different areas, we can have a general discussion about that, which I think would be productive in terms of just how we would take action in the future.
Well, and I think it would also be helpful at that time to give some direction from the board on what areas we consider to be in the inner circle not to be
right.
touched.
Yeah, so that discussion would be good.
I also think it's beneficial. When we went through cuts before, we started that process early and, you know, so that the public at least had a chance to know what was going on, and that the first time they didn't hear about it was when we were, you know, firing a bunch of people. Yeah, so
is the rest of the board okay with an information report at the next board meeting?
Okay.
We didn't fire a bunch.
Okay. November 10th is an unassigned day for schools. November 11th, Veterans Day, schools and district office closed. November 18th is the next Board of Education meeting. There being no further business, this meeting is adjourned at 8:25.